Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
When something awful happens, our natural instinct is to do something about it. And in the wake of a deadly mass shooting in July, the city of Toronto asked the federal government for what felt right at the time.
Why does anyone in this city need to have a gun at all?
And on Monday, in a unanimous vote in City Council, Montreal also asked the government for a similar ban, only they took it a step further.
The declaration demands that Ottawa strengthen Bill C-71 to make it illegal for all civilians to own handguns and assault rifles.
The federal Liberal cabinet is currently meeting in Nanaimo, BC, and gun control is expected to be on that agenda.
So we are always interested in hearing from a broad range of views about what next steps we can take.
The government could update Bill C-71, which they tabled in March, to include either or both of these measures. So if there was ever a time for a ban on handguns in Canada to move forward, this is it. Most Canadians don't really understand how strict our gun laws are right now, so would a total handgun ban in Toronto or even across all of Canada actually accomplish anything? Or would it just make us feel better? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
I think that people perhaps conflate America's gun culture with Canada's gun culture, when in fact they're so, so different.
Manisha Krishnan is a senior writer and host for Vice Canada. She's covered gun violence and gun policy in Canada for years. Manisha, what's the first thing you thought of when Toronto and Montreal proposed these bans?
So the first thing I thought of when Toronto asked for a handgun ban was I was wondering how is that even going to be legally feasible, because guns are regulated federally. So I was thinking, in practical terms, how would a handgun ban within Toronto work? So I sort of talked to a few experts about that. And the issue you would have is, aside from the fact that the city of Toronto obviously doesn't have the jurisdiction to ban handguns, let's say that they got, you know, a designation from the federal government to ban handgun sales within Toronto. Cities don't have borders, right? So,
right.
I mean, you could feasibly go and buy a handgun in Hamilton or somewhere else and bring it back into Toronto anyway. So in that sense, I didn't think it really made too much sense. I didn't think that it was a super practical motion. It seemed to me to be more of a knee-jerk emotional response.
Right. And now Montreal, which hasn't had a recent shooting, but of course has been the location of sort of several of the worst instances of gun violence in Canada, has asked the feds to look at a handgun ban across Canada. What does that make you think of? Is that more doable? It sounds like it.
I think that, well, I mean, the federal government is the one that has the power to do a handgun ban across the country. And, you know, if they really wanted to, they could do that, because in Canada, we don't have a constitutional right to bear arms. So they could, if they wanted to, impose a sweeping ban of handguns. It would be still very complicated, I think, to do. You know, there's probably something like a million handguns that Canadians own legally right now. So, I mean, what would a handgun ban look like? You know, what would the time period be for people to have to return their guns? Would the government buy back all of those handguns? I also think that they would run into some issues politically, because right now, one of the big issues is we don't really know how many guns that are used in violent crimes are coming from guns that were stolen, are coming from guns that were smuggled across the border, are coming from guns that were legally bought and then resold to the black market. So there's no real breakdown of that information. And I think you would have a huge outcry from legal gun owners who would say, we're being unfairly punished and you guys don't even have the data to prove that this is going to be effective in reducing crime.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we can get caught up because of the torrent of gun news coming out of America in looking at policies that we wish we could implement there that are actually possible to implement here without looking at what's already in place, which leads me to ask you, how hard is it to get a handgun in Canada compared to America?
it's a lot more challenging. There's a lot more hoops that you have to jump through. One of the big things that I'll say right off the bat is when we talk about America, America's gun laws are so fragmented. You can go, you know, it changes from state to state. Sometimes it changes down to the county or municipal level. So that's a big part of why we look at their gun laws and go, okay, they're not really effective because they're not regulated across the board the way that ours are. But just to kind of run you through the way that our handgun laws work, essentially you have to pass a safety test, then you go and apply for your license, and at that point you need a photo, you need references, you need to disclose your mental health history, anything in your past that shows a criminal record or anything like that will come up. You even have to disclose your current and prior conjugal partners, who the RCMP can then sort of check up on and interview if they want to. Yeah, exactly. And the reason that that makes sense is because if you look at a lot of gun crimes, violent gun crimes, they are domestic. So it's, you know, husband killing his wife or husband doing a murder-suicide or something like that, an ex-boyfriend. So it makes sense that they would actually want to talk to your prior girlfriend, boyfriend, or whatever, just to kind of check for that violent history. Then you have to wait. There's a minimum 28-day waiting period. I think it can actually be a lot longer than that. Then after that, to transport a handgun in Canada, you need something called an authorization to transport. And essentially, it's a permit. And on this permit, it'll say, okay, Manisha's house, the shooting range, and maybe a couple other places that I would be authorized to take my handgun to in a car. And I would have to have that piece of paper with me when I was transporting it. And if you sort of don't have that with you, or if you go on off on some detour, you are committing a federal crime, essentially. So it's pretty strict. And you also, to have a handgun, you would have to say that you were using it for target shooting purposes. And you would most likely have to join a shooting club, because then that's pretty much the only place that you would get permission to take your handgun to. Carrying a handgun for self-defense, that is not a thing in Canada.
It's a lot of work to go through to get a gun and then sell it on the black market.
Exactly. And the other thing, just with the black market sales thing, because, you know, we've had police officers say, well, a lot of the gun crimes, you know, 50% of the crimes are people who have bought them legally and then sold them.
Yeah, I saw that stat.
Yeah, and we don't have, that's not a stat, though, really. That's just a comment that, you know, certain cops have been making. They haven't shown us the data to back that up. But that is actually such a stupid thing to do, you know, if somebody were to do that, because handguns are registered, like they're tracked by the government. So if the cops wanted to, they could come and check up on you and be like, show me your inventory of handguns. And, you know, if you don't have all your guns, they're not accounted for, or if one of your guns that you sold shows up in a crime, that most likely will get tracked back to you.
So, I mean, I have to be honest, I knew it was strict in Canada to get a handgun. I didn't know it was that strict. And it's so weird to me because it does seem like a ton of hurdles to overcome. And then at the same time, we have now two city councilors begging the federal government, saying it's so easy to get a gun. There's so many guns on our streets. Can you do something about it? Where does that come from?
I mean, you know, it's politicians, you know, they speak this way after these traumatic things happen and they want to kind of ease the public and comfort them. And I think that that's mostly where this is coming from. They want to be seen as taking action, right? But I think really we need a lot more information before we can go asking for something like a sweeping ban. Because as I said, like, we just don't know where these guns are actually coming from. You know, maybe it's a border issue if in fact the majority of them are still being smuggled from the U.S. Or if it is really a case of people buying guns legally and then selling them to the black market, maybe there are measures that we could look at to kind of have, let's say, you know, I buy 10 of the same kind of handgun in a 1 month or 2 month period. Maybe that sets off a flag so that the cops come and check up on me and check my inventory. You know what I mean? Like, there's other smaller measures, less dramatic measures that I think that people could take. But frankly, I think part of the problem is a lot of the public is quite ignorant about what our gun laws are. So something like a handgun ban just sounds a lot easier, simpler, and it's just an easier message to get across.
When I think of a handgun ban, I kind of think of immediately a political football, right? Like, there's going to be a substantial risk to Trudeau's Liberals if they do decide to act on any of these requests, because it kind of sounds like a ready-made election issue for Andrew Scheer and the Conservatives.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that, I don't know, you know, depending on how much of an issue Trudeau wants to make out of it, I mean, maybe he could really try to push it as an election issue. But at the same time, as I said before, it would be so complicated. Like, look at how much trouble that they've had with cannabis. It's been, you know, super chaotic. I think, you know, adding something like a sweeping gun ban to their plate right now, I just think that it would be super complicated, and it would definitely become a political football.
How can we balance our approach, and by us, I mean like everybody in big cities, between wanting, you know, policy that makes it seem like we're taking action, we're doing something that will get all guns off the streets, and things that might actually have a bigger impact on how we combat this?
Well, you know, a lot of times when I see politicians creating study groups or what have you, you kind of tend to roll your eyes because you're like, oh, do we actually need more studies on this? But I do think it's actually, in this case, positive that the Association of Police Chiefs is actually going to look at this issue and hopefully break down where these guns being used in crimes are coming from. And I think, like, that's a first step. I also think, though, maybe the media really has a role in this. You know, one thing that I've noticed, because a couple years ago, I went through the process of getting a gun license myself. And prior to that, I was completely ignorant about our gun laws and frankly had no interest in guns. And so I didn't really care. And that completely affected the way that I would report on gun stories. And so I think the media could do a better job in explaining what our current gun laws are and not just taking these talking points from politicians at face value. So don't just report on the fact that Montreal and Toronto are calling for a handgun ban. Really get into the holes and really explain what that means, how practical that actually is, because I think that's another thing that's really missing is the gun literacy amongst journalists in this country is frankly awful.
So you went through the entire process to get a gun license? Did you get one?
Yeah, to get an unrestricted gun license. So what I ended up buying was a rifle. So it wasn't the same as what you'd need for a handgun, but similar.
Do you still have it?
No. I did the process for a documentary that we did on Canada's gun laws and sold it afterwards. I don't have a car, so for me, it's really awkward to carry. Like, you can't just carry around a rifle, right? Like,
no, probably
like
not.
It's like half the length of my body. So for me, it just wasn't a hobby that I was particularly passionate about. And then not having a car also makes it like additionally basically impossible. So yeah, I sold it.
What was that process like, though? How did you feel going through it?
I was pretty nervous because I haven't had much exposure to guns, or I hadn't at that point. But one thing I realized was that gun people, they're really passionate, but they're also very nerdy. Like, it's like being a part of this very nerdy club. And I think the reason for that is because the laws are so highly technical here in Canada. And gun owners, our names get run through a database basically every day. So if you break a law, it will come up, it'll be flagged. And so they're very conscious of that. And for the most part, everybody was really welcoming and really friendly. And it did sort of, it's not shooting, especially shooting bigger guns, was not something that appealed to me. Even towards the end of the doc, every time I would shoot a gun, I would sort of like be like, ah, or like jump up because just the sound. It's just not something that I really became accustomed to. But it did sort of take away some of that trepidation and nervousness that I had. And it also gave me, you know, an appreciation of what people actually go through to be able to own firearms in this country.
From that process, what's the biggest misconception you came out of it thinking that people have about guns in this country, that non-gun owners have about guns in this country?
I think that people perhaps conflate America's gun culture with Canada's gun culture. when in fact they're so, so different. And I think that people really don't realize the hoops that you have to go through in this country to be able to own a firearm. There's probably a lot of people who don't even understand the different classifications of firearms in this country. And so you'd need to have a different license if you want a handgun versus just, you know, a shotgun versus a prohibited gun, which most people cannot obtain anyway. So I think maybe generally speaking, because the only times that we hear about guns in the news is when there's a shooting and something bad happens, I think that there's a general misconception that, you know, all guns are bad or that they're so easy to get your hands on. And in fact, that's not really the case. The other misconception about guns is that, you know, when people talk about something like a handgun ban, they're not really thinking about how many of these guns used in these crimes were actually obtained legally. So how many of them came from legal gun owners versus, you know, illegal means.
So do you think we'll ever see a handgun ban in this country?
I think it's possible. I think it would take a very long time, though. I think what the liberals are proposing right now is sort of a baby step thing. Maybe we will inch towards something like a handgun ban, but I think it'll be quite a while before we see it.
Thanks, Manisha.
Thank you.
That was The Big Story. And that was your big story because we asked you on Twitter yesterday whether or not you'd like us to cover Donald Trump or stick with something Canadian. And shockingly, given that the Big Orange Man was on every TV screen, you guys chose a Canadian topic, so we gave it to you. And we'd like to do that again. So feel free to hit us up anytime at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can go to contact us, or you can just hang out and listen to our entire back catalog. If you have a suggestion, as always, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, at Big Story Podcast, we're always listening. And of course, you can find us and subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate us, review us, tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.